Mark, welcome here to Active Voice Radio today.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Mark, this was a personal journey for you in many ways. Tell us about why you approached this subject of Holocaust rescuers.
Well, there's two reasons. One is that my father was on the last boat out of Poland, and all his relatives and friends who were left behind perished in the Holocaust. So I grew up in the shadow of the Holocaust, and it was something really scary because my father wouldn't really talk about it, but you'd feel it in the silences. In the book, I speak of it as a wound without memory, and I always wanted to come to terms with it. So as an adult, when I had an opportunity to do this project, it occurred to me that by talking to people who weren't afraid at that time, who had the presence of mind and the generosity of spirit to reach out to their fellow citizens and help them at a time when they were extremely vulnerable, this could be not only an inspiring experience, but also a back door for me into facing some of my own fears about the Holocaust and working through them.
What are those fears? So many children of those who either escaped or survived the Holocaust talk about the silence and having to go through this discovery on their own in many ways. What are those fears you had to deal with?
Well, when something really traumatic happens, it kind of you have reverberations across generations. So, I mean, I would have nightmares of Nazis stabbing me with bayonets. One nightmare I'd wake up and, I mean, in the dream I'd see the bayonet coming through my chest, stuff like that. So I was really afraid to touch the subject, but I kept on being drawn to it. That's the nature of trauma, that you're drawn to it, but you're afraid of it. And as I got to know the rescuers and hung out with them and heard their stories and was just overwhelmed by their hospitality and kindness and warmth and love, I was not only, you know, just totally turned around by who they are spiritually, but it also kind of became a healing process for me in terms of my family background.
And then when we talk about these rescuers and the Dutch people, you make a point of illustrating how few Dutch citizens were actually physically involved with rescue. And how is it that a group decides to do this? In the foreword of the book, it talks about organized goodness. How does that organized goodness happen?
Well, it happens one by one by one. First, you get somebody who has some strong convictions, and they find another like-minded person, and then they know of somebody else. And pretty soon you've got something like the Amsterdam Student Group, group of college students in the Netherlands that saved about 400 children. And another example is there's a Calvinist Protestant minister who felt strongly it was his Christian duty to help the Jews in their time of persecution. And he called on members of his congregation, and one thing led to another, and they also saved 300 or 400 children. So it all starts with someone thinking for themselves, having the strength to act on their convictions, and then drawing to themselves like-minded people. By the way, Chris, I want to just pick up a loose end. At the beginning, I said there were two reasons why I was drawn to the project. The other reason, besides working out my family history, was because I had been a studio guitarist in Los Angeles for 10 years, and I had gotten really sick of the music business, which is why I went back to school, which led to me getting this grant to do this research. But during those 10 years in L.A. as a studio guitarist, I became really disenchanted with the focus on me, 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 everybody wanting to be rich and famous, you know, the one with the most toys wins, self-aggrandizement, me first kind of thing. And I think unconsciously I was searching for an antidote to all that selfishness. And when I met the rescuers, they just blew me away because their value system and what they live by is so entirely opposite from the prevalent value system that I would encounter in L.A. And it really, that also was a big healing process because they have so much spiritual energy, and it really, really activated my spiritual energy, and also it activated my activism.
A lot of this seems to have been very fortuitous for you as well. One of the gentlemen, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, Keyes Venstra?
Keyes Venstra, yes.
Actually,
I called him Keyes for years, and then he was too polite to point out I was mispronouncing his name. But then I met a Dutch woman who informed me it's actually Case.
Huh.
Case Venstra.
There's this wonderful photo of Case with a small guitar like a ukulele in the book here. And there's the story of how you met him. You literally bumped into this gentleman in a coffee shop and discovered he was just the type of person you were looking to speak to.
Yeah. I mean, he never told his story to anybody. He wasn't, he wasn't interested in... I mean, for him, it was just what he did. It was the right thing to do. And he didn't have a need to tell anybody. But when he heard that, when I explained to him that I was really wanting to hear his story, he sat down with me, and we were both extremely moved because it just came out of him like it just was, I can't even tell you how moving it was to have him have held his story for over 50 years and then sit down with me and speak it. It was a very powerful moment.
I'm struck by this sense of when you met Case, that it was his presence alone that invited you up to speak to him. Does he demonstrate the outward attitude of the rescuers?
Oh, sure. They're very humble. They're very kind. When I saw Case, he just seemed like this very kindly old man with a kind of a weather-beaten face. Turns out that he likes to sail. That's his big escape from, the tensions of the weight he carries with him still from the Holocaust, because many of these rescuers, they still have nightmares about what they went through, and it wasn't easy. And yet, they're some of the most contented people I've ever met, because they really know what life's about. It's not about having a bigger car or a bigger house and all of these material possessions that we get so caught up in. It's about doing the right thing and living by your own highest convictions.
We're speaking with Mark Klempner. He's the author of The Heart Has Reasons, Holocaust Rescuers and Their Stories of Courage.